Council, before you begin, we're going to welcome to the court students from West Salem High School who are here with us with our award-winning Court with Class program. Would the students from West Salem High School please rise so we can see you and greet you? Thank you for coming, and we hope this is an informative and entertaining session. You may be seated. Now that the court has met you, I would like to introduce you to the court. I'll start on my far left with our newest member. That's about 2.5 hours on the bench, Justice David Prosser. To Justice Prosser's right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. To my immediate left is Justice William Babbage. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice Donald Steinmetz, and to his right, Justice John Wilcox, and on the far right, Justice Patrick Crooks. The students have been given summaries of the case they are about to hear, and there are summaries outside in their material about the court system outside, too, for everyone's use. Those who I have not introduced and are here, we welcome you also. With that said, we will call the second case today, 96-2489, Deutsches Land, Inc. versus City of Glendale. And representing Deutsches Land is Attorney Braun.
May it please the court. My name is Hugh Brown. I'm a member of the Milwaukee law firm of Godfrey Brown and Frazier. With me is Mr. Jeffrey Janik from our firm. We appear here today on behalf of Deutsches Land, a non-profit real estate holding corporation, which holds a 14-acre complex in the city of Glendale for the benefit of 5 non-profit societies. Very quickly, 2 dancing societies, Oberlander and Wendelstoma, 1 singing society known as Gesangverein, a social and cultural society known as the Nugans.
You're going to give us a paper with all these names spelled out, aren't
you? They've worked a long time, Justice, in getting me to pronounce those correctly, and today I'm not certain that I have them right. And the final society is, of course, the Bavarian Soccer Club. We bring to the court today a very simple issue. The issue is whether or not these 5 nonprofit societies, operating through their nonprofit holding corporation, are eligible for a partial exemption from real property tax for that portion of the complex which is used for nonprofit purposes. Now, a word is necessary about the facility themselves. I have had the marshal distribute to you some papers which summarize excerpts from the various appendices that have been filed here. The top item, I believe, is a plat showing this 14-acre complex. Involved there, very briefly, is 5.5 acres of land used to play soccer. 4.5 acres of land used as a festival park along the Milwaukee River, and 4 acres of land which are used for parking and the siting of the Bavarian Inn. A word about the Bavarian Inn. It is a significant, substantial structure built in 1967. It contains 23,700 square feet. Significant is that on the first floor, there is operated a commercial restaurant and bar and large banquet facility. That first floor contains 15,000 square feet. On the ground floor of this building, there is 8,700 square feet, and that space on the ground floor is used primarily as club rooms for these five nonprofit societies. Now, the application for exemption in this case was pursuant to this partial exemption statute. The Bavarians asked for a 25% exemption on the Bavarian Inn, and they asked for total exemption for the soccer fields and the festival park. One other item is important to an understanding of these issues, and that is the corporate structure of these organizations. These five societies that I have mentioned were organized, some in the late 1800s, and became loosely affiliated. In 1967, they were all incorporated as nonprofit societies under Chapter 181 of the statutes. The significant thing about this is that also in 1967, these five societies created three operating corporations. The first operating corporation is the plaintiff, Deutsches Lahn, a holding company, a corporation which is specifically contemplated by 501(c)(2) of the Internal Revenue Code. The second nonprofit corporation that they created was UGS, United German Societies. It was a corporation which took responsibility for coordinating the activities of these five societies. And then finally, they created a third corporation. And this corporation was a for-profit corporation created under the provisions of Chapter 180 of the Wisconsin statutes. And that corporation is the corporation which carries on all of the for-profit making activities at the Bavarian Inn. Now, it may be that this is the most thoroughly organized ethnic club in America, but the court should understand that this elaborate organization is not just a function of a Teutonic passion for order, although that may be involved. The real reason for doing this is very specific. When they created this structure in 1967, the object was to isolate in a for-profit corporation all of the profit-making activities. And the reason they did that is because they wanted to protect the other five societies and two operating corporations from being involved in profit-making activities, as the IRS defines it, the creation of unrelated business taxable income. Now, it was particularly significant that in 1991, the Wisconsin legislature changed the provisions of this partial exemption statute, which today is before the court for construction. Under the old statute, basically, you were entitled to a partial exemption, depending upon how much you used your facility for profit-making purposes. But in 1991, the Wisconsin legislature made the test for the allocation of profit and non-profit assessments on the creation of unrelated business taxable income and wrote it into that statute. That was a remarkable occurrence for the Bavarians because it justified the judgment of the council that created this elaborate structure. Because the Bavarian Ethnic Club had already, in a sense, anticipated this move by the Wisconsin legislature. It now, for the Glendale assessor, was an extremely simple matter to simply go to Walled House Inn, Inc. That's the organization that operates the restaurant, bar, and banquet hall. And say to Walled House, how much of this facility do you use to generate unrelated business taxable income? And how much time do you absorb doing that?
I just would like to interrupt just on the facts. Now, lot one is soccer. Lot four is soccer.
Right.
Where's the Bavarian? Is that on three or two?
The Bavarian Inn is located on lot two. If I hear your question.
Yes.
Lot one and lot four
are the soccer.
Are for soccer. Lot two is parking for the entire facility, and you'll see the cross-hatched area. That's the Bavarian Inn.
Okay, what's on lot three?
And on lot three is the festival park.
Okay.
And you'll notice there are park improvements. There's a large fest hall there, which is used for these park activities, particularly Oktoberfest, which is held in the three weekends following Labor Day. That means this weekend, next weekend, and the following weekend. They use that for singing and dancing and drinking during the festivals. In the wintertime, between approximately October 15th and April 1st, that building is used by the Bavarian soccer teams to play and practice.
How many, does the record indicate how many days of use by the benevolent organizations of that festival hall?
The Bavarian Inn, if we're talking first about the Bavarian Inn, which is the main structure.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the festival hall. As I understand the facts, 20 days of the year, it is rented out to organizations, companies, whoever wants to use it for a picnic gathering or whatever. My question is, does the record indicate how many days it is used by the benevolent associations?
The position we've taken on that issue and the evidence in the record is that for the balance of the 345 days...
We've taken that position. The trial court, as I understood it, the decision, took the 20 days of public use and compared it with 365 days and found 20 days inconsequential. That is only 5-6%. Yet, I think if you take a look at the Cudworth opinion, it suggests that you don't compare 20 to 365, but you compare 20 to the actual days of use by the benevolent association. And in that case, the Cudworth case, they said there was an insufficiency of evidence to discern how many days of use by the benevolent association. So my question to you is, does the record indicate how many days of use by the benevolent association?
No, I think the testimony at trial and the various officers of the associations that testified at trial, and there were four or five of these officers testifying, that we're talking about Old Heidelberg Park, the festival park, was really open and available to the membership at any time. They could go in there and use it at any time during those 345 days.
Well, now, could they use it, for instance, I see that this coming weekend we have a Sprecher Fest, 3-day event, includes music, volleyball, I suppose put on by Sprecher Brewing. Is that exclusively for the members of the Benevolent Association?
No. The way the park has been used, and I think the record, there's no dispute on the facts, Walt House Inn, the for-profit making corporation, goes into that park and puts on these festivals for various picnics. It's really picnics. Most of them, according to the record, are one-day affairs. And the Walt House Inn, not in all cases, but in most cases, provides the food and beverage.
Is that leased then? Is Festival Park leased to the operating profit company for a certain amount of time? And is that true also the Bavarian Inn, that there's a lease?
No. The lease issue is important, and as long as we're at that point, let's talk about that. Initially, in 1985 to 1990, there was a formal lease between Deutsches Land and Walt House Inn, the for-profit corporation. It defined the amount of rent and the relationship between the parties, including the area in the Bavarian Inn that was being rented. That lease expired in May of 1990, and it was not renewed. It was not renewed by agreement of the parties, and it was not renewed by operation of law. The rule under 704, I think, is if you have a lease for more than 1 year, it's automatically renewed if the tenant remains in the premises and pays the rent. The difficulty here was that it was not automatically renewed because Walt House couldn't pay the rent. The rent was $120,000 a year, and in, I think, 1993, the first year that we're involved here, they only could pay $36,000 to Deutsches Land. In 1994, they only paid $9,000 to Deutsches Land. So, to answer your question, there was this arrangement between Deutsches Land, the owner of the fee, and Walt House that was permitted to use a part of the Bavarian Inn. It was based on, the relationship was based on the terms of the old lease, but in the applicable years, 93, 94, and 95, there actually was not a lease.
The question, as I understood it, was, is the Festival Park, was that the subject of the lease?
No.
That's lot 3 as opposed to lot 2. You answered with regard to lot 2. The question is with regard to lot 3.
Right. Getting back to your question, Justice Bradley, I didn't complete the answer to that question. The record is that there is no lease, written or oral, between Deutsches Land and Walt House regarding the use of the park.
Was there ever?
There was never such a lease. Now, how did this come about? I think it grew over time that the Walt House Inn had an opportunity to sponsor picnics in the summertime. And they did it. And they did it with the consent and acquiescence of Deutsches Land. Now, you have to remember that the profit-making corporation, Walt House Inn, is solely owned by the 5 nonprofit societies. In a sense, it is a wholly owned subsidiary of those nonprofit societies. The question is, why would you have such an arrangement? The reason for it is to satisfy the federal government and the state taxing authorities so that you had one location where all the profit-making activities occur. And Walt House Inn reports the income that they make, and they pay tax on it. And the portion of the property that they use for making that profit, under both the old and the new statute, is subject to real property tax.
Mr. Brown, you talked about legislative changes in 1991.
Yes.
And you indicated that this would make it simple for the city of Glendale in regard to property taxes. What did the city of Glendale do in regard to property taxes on this property prior to 1991?
Prior to the year of application for this exemption, 93, 94, and 95, Deutsches Land paid the full amount of the taxes. There's a summary of the taxes.
So there was never an exemption asked for?
There was never an exemption asked for. It wasn't until 1992 that an application was made. That testimony in the record may give you some clue to how that came about. It was observed that all of the comparable ethnic clubs in neighboring Milwaukee all had partial exemptions and operated in much the same way the city of Milwaukee, much the same way as the Bavarian Inn operated, the Italian Community Center, the Serb Hall, and the Turners. And so, at the instance of their council, present council, it was suggested that they should make an application for a tax exemption consistent with the established policies and the established interpretation of this statute, both the old and the new statute. At the time this application was filed in 1993, the new statute had been in effect for a couple of years. So, Justice Crooks, it was simple then. For the Bavarians, they had such a precise setup. They knew exactly where their unrelated business taxable income was coming from. So all the assessor of Glendale had to do is go to that corporation and say, how often do you use that Bavarian Inn? And what area of the Bavarian Inn do you use? And getting back to Justice Bradley's question, how often do you use Old Heidelberg Park?
Well, let's stay with that question. Both of those questions. How often do you use the park? As I read the Cudworth opinion, it said that, reading from page 13, it is unfortunate that we do not have a record of the use by members and non-members to determine the actual proportion of use by each, where there is no evidence of what the actual situation was on a day-to-day basis. The doubt must be resolved against the claimant of tax exemption. To do so is to do no more than restate the rule of the state, etc. So why should that language not be applied in this case? And if it is applied, where in the record is the actual day-to-day use of the members? I'm talking about the Fest Hall. Should it be applied to that language, or should we say, no, that isn't something we should be following?
I think in the Cudworth case, I think Justice Hansen was concerned that they weren't sure in that main dining room at Cudworth how often that was used by members and how often it was used by non-members. They also had the problem that there was some lack of clarity. In the Cudworth Post, they had that lower dining room and bar. Initially, I think in the early post-war years, exclusively for the members, and then, of course, a lot of guests came in there, and Justice Hansen complained that that wasn't too clearly defined, and what happened in Cudworth is that they taxed all of that area, all of that restaurant bar area.
Does this language apply to our case that we need evidence?
I think it does, Justice Bradley, and what happened, the proof in this case, was given through four or five witnesses, officers of these various corporations, and really primarily the testimony of Diane Verdagen, who is the manager of the Bavarian Inn. She was asked the question, what percentage of time is this facility used for profit and non-profit purposes? And her answer was, and the answer of all these parties, undisputed evidence in the record, is that Bavarian Inn was used 40% non-profit, 60% profit. And when Judge Hayes dealt with this, I think he complimented the Bavarians for only asking for 25% exemption in their application. And remember, there's no absolute precision here. So the Bavarians felt that that inn should be exempt 25%, even though the testimony was that the nonprofits used it 40% of the time.
I'm focusing on the fest hall, not the inn.
Okay, we're back in the park.
That's right. That's the 20 days.
Right. Now, the disposition that Judge Hayes made of that, I mean, he recognized that Waldhaus, the for-profit corporation, was using that park. And he nonetheless ruled on some of the basis of the language in the Cudworth Code that was an incidental use that did not destroy entitlement to exemption. It's interesting, Justice Bradley, that we responded immediately and said, hey, we admit that we use that park for-profit purposes. So we invite the court to make 1 acre of that, 25% of that park, taxable to reflect the Waldhaus use of that park on 20 occasions. The reason we did that is because it didn't really make any difference in this case. We were only entitled, the Bavarians were only entitled to a 10-acre exemption.
Counsel, and so before we get to that, one final question that deals with the facts that are perplexing me. Are there offices in the bottom floor of the inn that are used exclusively by the benevolent organizations? There was some language that suggested to me, of course, there are the 3 meeting rooms or 2 meeting rooms in the Rathskeller, however you want to define it. But some language in the brief suggests to me that there were independent offices used exclusively. And I just want that cleared up.
No, I think the record, my recollection of the record on that point, Mrs. Bradley, is that the meetings rooms, the wine stube room, the 2 rooms on the ground floor, and the Raskin were used almost exclusively by the clubs for their club rooms. But on occasion, Waldhaus would have a party down there and serve food and beverage down there.
For instance, on your reply brief, page 1, it says, located there at the bottom floor are the offices and storage facilities of the societies and its 2 meeting rooms, Edelweiss and Weinstrom, along with the Rathskeller. So are there individual offices, or that's what...
Excuse me, there are offices on that ground floor, and they are shared by Waldhaus and the 5 societies.
So there are no offices exclusively used by the benevolent organization.
I think the only areas that are used exclusively by the benevolent associations are the storage areas in that ground floor level, where particularly the Bavarian Soccer Club keeps pieces of equipment.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Let's just get to the law for a moment.
You're right. That's Can I ask a preliminary question?
Okay, go ahead.
Whether this is preliminary, just because I'm not sure if I understand this case yet. My understanding, in a nutshell, is that if the Bavarian Inn is entitled to an exemption, then it seems to almost automatically follow that the soccer fields are entitled to an exemption. But conversely, if the Bavarian Inn is not entitled to an exemption, then it also follows that the soccer fields are not entitled to an exemption. Is that too simple of a way to put it, or am I correct in that analysis?
I don't know that either the trial judge or the Court of Appeals reached that issue, but I think that's possible, and certainly counsel opposed have argued that if the exemption for the Bavarian Inn is not, you don't have any buildings that are served by these soccer fields. I would agree with that.
But there's an argument that even if the Bavarian Inn is exempt, the soccer fields are not. I mean, that's one of the issues here.
I think that argument is also made. Now, we find that the argument that these soccer fields don't serve the benefit of that building, that is the easiest part of this case. I mean, if the court sustains the Court of Appeals on that issue, every playground, every soccer field, every baseball field attached to private schools, private religious schools, and churches, going to be subject to tax.
That's what the debate is on this. That's the debate on the soccer field.
That's the issue.
Can we just run through, as a matter of what statutory provision you claim governs each of these lots? So let's take lot 2. What statutory provision? We got 3 choices, as I understand it. We got the preamble, we got 4, and we got 8. Okay, what governs lot 2?
Well, I think it's the provisions of 7011 sub 4, which provides that benevolent associations, and there's no dispute here that these societies are benevolent associations, are entitled to exemption along with land necessary for the location and convenience of the buildings not to exceed 10 acres.
So that's used exclusively by a benevolent association. That's what you claim for, claim lot 2?
No, lots 1 and 4, the soccer fields.
I want to and 2 first. That's got a building which is rented.
2.
That's Bavarian Inn.
That's partial exemption 7011 sub 8.
Sub 8. And that is property that is exempt and is used as a trade or business for which the owner is subject to tax. That's, and that, you say, would have a 25% exemption for the use. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Lot 3, that's the festival park. That has the buildings, that is, and club rooms, but it's partially used by non-club members. Under what provision is that exempt, in your opinion? And that's 100% exempt.
The same provision, land necessary for the location and convenience of the building.
And the view is that all the other use of it is incidental.
That's the position we took alternatively, and the trial judge found that the 20 uses a year were incidental. There's some case law to support that position.
And if it was decided it wasn't incidental, you'd still say it came under 8, but there would be a partial exemption.
There would be a partial exemption, and we invited the trial court to do that because we couldn't use all of the exemption that he gave us. So we were willing to have an acre of the park taxable and then have an acre of the parking lot in the inn non-taxable.
And the Court of Appeals disagreed with you because it said that this was leased property, and leased property doesn't come under 8. Is that a good summary, short and summary?
Yeah, that's
what
correct.
Happened?
And it is good that we reached the central issue. The Court of Appeals, if I may respond to that, the Court of Appeals denied the partial exemption because they said that section that you're relying on has at the bottom, this section doesn't apply to leased property.
Right.
And the Court of Appeals said, hey, you leased this property to the Bavarian Inn, you're not entitled to a partial exemption.
And your argument here is that the lease expired, but you just sort of kept on with the same kinds of terms, but there was no lease.
Very quickly, in summary, our position is, if there was a lease at all, it was a partial lease of just a section that was used for profit purposes. So, secondly, and quite importantly, this was not a lease to a third party. This was a lease to ourselves, and it was set up as an administrative arrangement to facilitate tax reporting. And then finally, Justice, that third point, that the lease had expired. There was no lease. It was just an understanding between Deutsche Slam and a wholly owned subsidiary of the 5 societies as to how the profit-making activities were going to be carried on in the end. And that, I think, in our view, that was a central issue. If they have any argument at all, that's the... That's the argument that Glendale has in supporting this Court of Appeals decision. Very, very fragile. Because when you step back from this, obviously the purpose of this statute is to permit partial exemptions. And across the state of Wisconsin, these ethnic clubs carry on precisely or very similarly to this policy. If the Court of Appeals decision is sustained, it's going to wreak havoc to this whole system that has been in place for many, many years.
All right. Despite the counter-argument, as you know, that's made in one of the amicus briefs. But now I want to get to lots 1 and 4. Mm-hmm. And there you claim that those are exempt under what provision? The choices are preamble 4 and 8.
Under 7011 sub 4, they are land necessary for the location and convenience of buildings.
And what?
The statutory language is you can have an exemption for land necessary for the location and convenience of buildings. Those are provisions of 7011 sub 4. They're in your materials. Unfortunately, not that language is not underlined, but it's there. And that is the basis in response to Justice Abramson's question.
And it's not over 10 acres.
And it's not over 10 acres.
Okay. So, and the answer of the Court of Appeals to that was one, a Pace law, Kickers of Wisconsin. But then it said, quote, 70.114 extends only to that land, and this is italicized, necessary for location and convenience of buildings while such property is not used for profit. And these the Court of Appeals says there's no evidence in this record that lots 1 and 4, the soccer fields, are necessary for location and convenience for any building that's exempt. And your answer to
our response is that those soccer fields and that park bear the same relationship to the Bavarian Inn building as does every playground, every baseball field, every soccer field located on the premises of private schools, religious schools, and churches.
Does the record show where the people dressed for soccer or undressed for soccer? Did they use showers in these rooms? Did they have parties afterwards? Or where'd they go in, I'm sorry, I don't know the terminology, in soccer halftime or whatever the equivalent is?
The rescuer is taken over. That's where the celebration occurs after the soccer game.
What about dressing?
In the ground floor.
What about, other than the celebration, what about dressing, undressing?
Dressing, showers, equipment. Everything were there, was there.
And used.
In those years.
And used.
And used.
That's in the record.
And the Bavarian Soccer Club meetings, their gatherings, their planning, everything was done on that lower floor, as was the case for the dancing societies and the singing societies.
That's for the Bavarian Inn. What about the Festival Park? Was it connected to that?
No.
Was the soccer related to the to Lot 3?
Yes, it was. To the extent that the soccer club uses, if you see that crosshatched area in Lot 3, that's called the festival. Actually, there are two festivals, one in the Bavarian Inn and one in Old Heidelberg Park. But the big one must have about 17,000 square feet in it, where the drinking and the singing and the dancing is done for Oktoberfest. In the wintertime, that same facility is used for soccer.
Okay, counsel. Thank you. You will have time for rebuttal. Mr. Gordon.
Morning, Madam Chief Justice and members of the court. Excuse me. There's this old adage that they try to teach us in law school that every case can be reduced to a single sentence. And rarely when a case gets up here does that adage even come close to being accurate. But I think this is one of the few cases that gets to this court which really can be disposed of in a single sentence. And that sentence is the basic principle of tax law that at least I learned back when the Chief Justice was teaching tax law. It says that every taxpayer is absolutely bound by the method in which he or she chooses to do their business and is bound by the consequences that necessarily flow from the way they choose to do business. And a taxpayer can't go back later point to some other taxpayer across the city line who operates his business differently and argue that he should be entitled to the same tax advantages that the other taxpayer got just because it's some other taxpayer. I think that fundamental principle is the reason why the Court of Appeals decided this case correctly.
Well, suppose there was only one corporation and it had a restaurant business.
A for-profit corporation or a not-for-profit?
Not-for-profit, not-for-profit, and had a restaurant business. Instead of having a profit corporation running the Bavarian Inn, it ran it itself.
Well, then you would, and once again, you have the sort of continuum from what is exempt to begin with. If you had a single corporation which did some benevolent things, but then also operated a for-profit restaurant, which has no relationship at all to the exempt activity, then that organization simply does not become exempt to begin with.
So what did they do wrong? What did the society do wrong in the beginning?
What they did here, under these facts of this case, they had the five parent corporations, and no one is disputing that they're benevolent. They have a lease. They have set up one subsidiary to hold the property, a second for-profit subsidiary to operate a for-profit restaurant and banquet hall that consumes the entire property. That is the way that they choose to do business, and that is the factual record that they are bound with. This case was lost at trial by the most fundamental failure of elementary elements of proof. I think the questions from the court, from Justice Bradley and the Chief Justice, just hit the tip of the iceberg.
Of course, they'll indicate they won at trial because they got the exemption. That was the decision of the trial judge that they did at least have a partial exemption.
Correct, but as we pointed out in both of our appellate briefs at both levels, there is a myriad of things that the circuit judge simply did not take into consideration. And I can dispose of that quickly. He just said, they're benevolent, they're nice people, they're exempt. And all of the exclusivity and leasing questions and everything else were never reached. There's all of these issues that have been raised in the briefs that are, for someone like me who practices in this area, fascinating issues. And I would love to have a case up here that actually delved into these issues, because it would be wonderful to litigate, but this is not that case. This is a simple case, as the Court of Appeals recognized, of simple failure of the most fundamental elements of proof. And indeed, every time I see one of the justices talk at a bar convention, you say, don't file huge appendixes. Well, we violated that rule with a rather thick appendix, but the point I wanted to make clear is the lofty legal issues are not really what matters here. This is a case of failure of proof at trial, so that our thick appendixes, all of the transcript pages, and all of the exhibit pages that make it clear that this is just a simple failure of proof case. And of course, this court has, in several opinions, has said we will not sit here to review Court of Appeals decisions simply on sufficiency of evidence.
But they failed to prove.
Let's start from the beginning. They failed to prove exclusivity. Under the statute, a property must be used exclusively for an exempt purpose in order to qualify a tax exemption,
That's under 4.
Correct.
Okay. And the only lot that they're claiming, lots that they claim fall under 4 is the soccer fields.
No, but you don't get to the other. Okay, the three provisions that you mentioned, Madam Chief Justice, were the preamble, which is essentially the leasing exception. So that's an exception. Subchapter 8 is also a secondary provision, because it says if you are already exempt and if you use part of it for a trade or business that is subject to UBI, then you compute the tax this way. So that really the correct answer, I think, that the petitioner would have to give necessarily to your question, which of the three provisions do you take under, has to be subsection 4. Because unless you get in as the benevolent association, et cetera, under subsection 4, you can't independently qualify under subsection 8. That's an exclusion to the exemption if you're already exempt. The leasing exception is the same thing. So that I think the Court of Appeals correctly determined that what this court said in Milwaukee Protestant Home is still good. You must, for any of these sublots, you must be used exclusively for an exempt purpose to qualify. So yes, if exclusivity is only under sub 4, that's the whole ball of wax, because you've got to get in under sub 4 to get in the door to even get into these other provisions.
So I was just going to ask, though, that the sector here of the public policy argument, that this is going to affect not only this institution, but and that they were brought into this by three others, Serb, Italian, and Turners, but it could affect other, quote, alleged tax exempt, is a red herring?
It is, and I mean, they need to be addressed separately. First, the soccer fields, which generate the fear that everything, every playground in the world will not be exempt. The Court of Appeals decided the soccer field issue based on the conclusion that, as this court has said for 100 years, going back to that Green Bay Canal case, and periodically through the last 100 years, this court has always said it, land cannot be exempt unless it is associated with or attached to an exempt building. Church playgrounds are exempt because they are affiliated with an exempt church. School playgrounds are exempt because they are affiliated with an exempt school. Here, they are asking for an exemption for a soccer field because it is affiliated with a for-profit restaurant. Those two don't mix the way that the school playground and the church playground mix.
They're saying that it's affiliated with a benevolent association.
It's a benevolent association.
At least on the top floor.
Well, but that's not the evidence in the trial record, and I'm a little disturbed because a lot of the colloquy in the first half hour involved things that are simply not in the record, and I'm trying to state what is in the record. It was undisputed with respect to the way the Bavarian Inn building, it is undisputed, one, that entire facility is leased from the holding company, Deutsches Land. The Court of Appeals did not just pluck that out of the sky. We cited in our brief at the bottom of 17 and the top of 18, we matched word for word the Court of Appeals conclusion with the direct testimony of the president of Deutsches Land, Ms. McCormick. The Court of Appeals concluded that she testified that the Bavarian Inn lease covers the entire facility and that Old Heidelberg Park is an extension of that facility. With respect to use of the building, it is undisputed that the entire building is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for public rental. This idea that we did not dispute this magic testimony that 40% of the building was used for exempt purposes is not true. And contrast this with the Milwaukee situation, where, once again, that's not relevant because it's a different jurisdiction, etc., but the taxpayers in those cases brought in, similar to the Alonzo Cutterworth case, in contrast to that, they brought in explicit evidence of square footage, time, things that satisfied the Milwaukee assessor that this was a clear partial exemption situation. Here, we had a single person pulling out of the air a number of 40%. Nope, why wasn't it 35? Why wasn't it 45? She just said, well, 40% seems like a nice number. Within minutes of that direct testimony, on my partner, Mr. Markovitz's cross-examination, this woman immediately admitted that absolutely no portion of Bavarian Inn is used exclusively for exempt purposes, and every square inch of the facility is available for public rental for profit 100% of the time.
What about the storage facilities? That's the only thing your opposing counsel said was exclusively used by the...
But once again, Justice Bradley, it's their burden of proof to come in and do what the Milwaukee facilities have done at the administrative level with their assessor. Come in with evidence. Here is a, 10,000 square foot building, and I may be way off on the number. 2,000, here's my trial exhibit saying 512 square feet are a closet. Here's a map, here's testimony, here's in the alternative uses of time. Nothing. They did nothing of that. They sent up this woman to say 40% is my number as the exempt use, and of course her testimony is completely incredible because she admitted that fact away seconds later in a cross-examination.
Is there any testimony in the record that would addresses or supports the conclusion that storage facilities are exclusively used by benevolent?
Absolutely not. It was their burden of proof, and there was no such testimony. The only testimony in this record is that everything is open for public rental. The so-called club meeting rooms are in fact one of seven party rooms in the basement, all of which have open bars, liquor facilities through there. One of the trial exhibits in the record, I think it's exhibit 46 or a higher number, is a page of the Ameritech Yellow Pages from Milwaukee, which advertises that the entire facility is available for public rental, and it says seven party rooms. And if you go through the building, you've got to be counting those meeting rooms as party rooms.
Suppose some of it was exclusively for this benevolent association. I don't care which part, take one of the floors storage. How would that change your argument?
If, because of the fact, and I'm presuming in your question, Madam Chief Justice, that presumes that there's still a lease of the entire facility. If there's a lease of the entire facility, then tax in part does not work. You go back to exclusivity. In that situation, you would be equivalent to the Milwaukee situation where if someone could come in and say, here at trial, not now, in the Supreme Court, but 3 years ago down the freeway in the trial court, if you come in with evidence of, here is a part of the building that is absolutely devoted exclusively, it is not leased to a for-profit corporation, that yields exclusivity where there may be some...
So it'll come under four.
You get under subsection four.
And you would get a percentage out, and that might take care of the soccer fields too.
In theory, in my the soccer field. Once again, we have there's the kickers issue of whether soccer fields can ever be exempt, which we claim they're not, because the Court of Appeals decided that kickers case a few years ago that says that teaching and playing soccer inherently by themselves is not an exempt activity. The taxpayers there chose to go in as an educational association. Plaintiff here is saying, well, we're recreational, but implicit in the Court of Appeals decision is you can't get it as recreational, so you have to get it as educational.
Now, they're taking the position there was no lease. They said the lease expired.
Once again, Madam Chief Justice, it's rented. There's no dispute that it's rented. Once again, I would direct the court in going back in chambers after the session is over, bottom of page 17, top of page 18 of our brief, the testimony of the president of the corporation who says it was completely leased, that the Bavarian Inn lease covers the entire facility. That's pages 127 to 130 of the appendix, and that this is a quote, the whole complex is leased to Waldhouse. That's page 131 of the appendix.
Well, you know, there's another theory in tax law. I talked to the other one too, which is sometimes you look to the substance, not the form. And that one of the arguments being made here by Mr. Brown is that, look, you got five organizations, you got the holding company, you got the entity that's taxed. And these are, they're not frauds on anyone. These are just simple administrative techniques for bookkeeping and other purposes and for federal income tax purposes on trade or business income. And that really you ought to look at the entire thing as a whole and not divide it out, and that they're leasing to themselves. I mean, that's what the whole point is.
Form over substance, if I remember what I was taught, and you will remember better than I did, goes only so far because it's the taxpayer still bound by what they do. But I think in going back to the first question you asked in the beginning, what if it was a single corporation?
Right.
If it was a single corporation that ran a for-profit restaurant, maybe this court would not even have gotten as far as taking the case, because then you have the clear non-exempt organization. Certainly, the initial wage in the door for this petitioner is the fact that they have the five benevolent, good-doing organizations and have spun off the for-profit operation that competes with every for-profit restaurant in the Milwaukee area. If there was a single corporation that was
a benevolent association, not
but would it be? But Madam Chief
That's
Justice, I'm sorry, that there could not be a single corporation that did singing and dancing and soccer and everything else. And oh, by the way, we also happen to own a highly advertised, highly popular, large banquet facility and restaurant that competes with every single restaurant in Milwaukee, and we still want to be called benevolent. One, I don't think any court would buy that, certainly not this court, certainly not the Court of Appeals. Two, you'd have every for-profit restaurant owner in the state up in arms saying, wait a minute, just decided we're a benevolent association.
Wait, counsel, what does that 8 mean? Property that is exempt under this section and is used in part in a trade or business. So you've got exempt property, but it's used in a trade or business.
Once again, that's back to the federal tax law comparison of keep in mind they tried to federalize the state code because that old statute, the definition there was useless. It didn't say anything. They federalized it. They made it based on UBI. And they did essentially what the federal tax code says, which is there's a continuum. If you are a church that, let's use the example from the city's Amicus brief, a church that sells quilts to support their basically exempt activity. Okay, that's fine. The church is still exempt. The selling of the quilts does not defeat the exemption, but some income is generated by a business that is not directly related to what they do, but is so close to being an innocuous activity that generates funds to support the exempt activity that we will allow it, but subject the tax itself to UBI. If it's a church that decides, let's get a McDonald's franchise and open it and compete with the McDonald's across the other side of I-43, that is so inconsistent with the ultimate exempt activity that under federal tax law, as you will always know better than I do, that defeats the exemption in the first instance. So I think the legislature, in trying to federalize the property tax code, did the same thing. Because that critical few words at the beginning of 8 saying, property that is exempt under this section, so you've got to hit the threshold of being exempt, and is used in a trade or business that is subject to UBI, you do the same thing under state property tax law you do under federal income tax law. You pay the tax, but you're still exempt.
According to page 9 of the City of Milwaukee and League brief, and they use the McDonald example, they say that under the preamble, 90% of the space, which is church space, would be exempt, and the 10% that McDonald's uses would be taxable.
I would not necessarily agree that a church that has a McDonald's, first of all, if it's a lease, we have a lease situation, but if it's the church operating a McDonald's, I don't necessarily agree with the city that would be exempt, that the entire facility would be exempt, because I think it's a continuum where you still have to be exempt and have this innocuous good faith activity consistent with the benevolence in order to raise money for the benevolent purpose. But if what you do you know, it's a classic case from law school of the NYU Law School and Spaghetti Factory. If you go too far down the road, you no longer are exempt. So I think maybe the city's example here may not be the case, and you might, I would say, and if you start getting into a single corporation, whether it's a church or whatever, in which the activity that part of the building is used for is a McDonald's in competition with other for-profit restaurants, like this facility, you lose your exemption, so you don't get into 8. In order to get into 8, you still have to be threshold and fundamentally exempt to begin with.
Would you have to be threshold and fundamentally exempt in total? In other words, this is my question. Assume your opposing counsel is correct that at the Bavarian Inn there are parts that are exclusively used by the benevolent organizations, and the record supports that. Why then are not the fest grounds, lot 3, why cannot that be taxed in part under sub 8? Or sub 1, depending on if you have, or the preamble rather, depending on if you have a lease.
Okay, assuming once again the fest grounds are also, on the record of this case, subject to lease. So if your question is assuming there's no lease, or if assuming there is a lease, no. Because
if
of the same.
If it's no lease, then it would arguably come under sub 8 taxed in part. Doesn't sub 8 deal with no leases and
preamble? Could be if, once again, if a hypothetical organization were set up with names that would hopefully be easier for me to pronounce because I'm not as good as Mr. Brown, that had benevolent activities and did something on those grounds exclusively to raise money for the organization, then yes, there's a tax in part. Here, they fail because in addition to Oktoberfest and Volkfest, they are, once again, in the phone book and in the yellow pages and in the newspapers, competing with every banquet facility in Milwaukee. Because if you look at, in the record, the list of organizations, and I'm not talking about Oktoberfest and Volksfest, I'm talking about W.H. Brady, Master Lock, Johnson Controls, Northwestern Mutual, McDonald's Corporation, ironically. In the record, organizations that clearly have no relation to Germanic heritage that are out there renting property 20, 30, whatever days a year. This facility is available for rental 20, 30 days a year. And that's where they lose the exemption. If it were only Volksfest and Oktoberfest, and if there were no lease, then I think you get possibly into the partial tax where you pay tax on the proceeds generated by Volksfest and Oktoberfest. And if that's all you do. But here, they lost it, one, because of the lease, but two, because they have the facility leased to a for-profit corporation. And once again, the for-profit corporation, undisputed testimony, is spilling the profits back in. And I think somewhere in our brief, hopefully we cite the part of the record where they say this is a huge profit center. These rentals are huge profit centers.
I need assistance. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Justice Wilcox.
I was going to say, this is similar. We had several amicus briefs from, I think, the Italian community. Isn't that the way they operate also? They have, it's open to the public.
That's the way that they operate, and I got to say, puzzled by why ICC and Turner Hall are in here with amicus briefs, because they are in a very different situation. Their exemption is not at risk in this case by a decision affirming the Court of Appeals, because they did it right. So they have a lease of a specific, finite, discrete part of their facility. They come in to the Milwaukee assessor and say, here's a map, here's our facility, and in fact, when the petitioner called the Milwaukee assessor adversely at trial, he testified, you know, these are different facts. These people came into me with very clear records, a lease saying, you know, here's our facility. These 300 whatever square feet are leased to a for-profit organization. The rest of it is not. these organizations did it right, so their exemption is not, excuse me, at all at risk here by a decision affirming the Court of Appeals. They are, if these petitioners had done it right, if they did not have a for-profit corporation to which the entire facility was leased, if they had come in at trial and done the exercise at trial, which is all we can look at here, is what happened 3 years ago in Judge Hayes' courtroom. If these petitioners had come into trial and had the sophisticated, backed up with charts and percentages and square feet and everything else, presentation that the ICC and Turner's and the Serbs made to the Milwaukee assessor, the result could have been different. But that's what I meant at the beginning, that they can't come in here and say, wait a minute, the three facilities in Milwaukee have an exemption. We want one too. It's not fair. Their facts are different, and the simple proof exercises, as mundane and boring as it is with all the wonderful, lofty issues that should be coming to this court, as mundane as it is to stand up here and say, this is a simple case of failure of proof, and this court should not even get into these lofty issues. That's really what I have to say, because it's just a fundamental failure of elementary proof, and I can't say that clearly.
So if I understand you, these other entities that we're referring to, they are exempt as to the property they use exclusively for their own benevolent purposes.
Correct.
They are totally taxable on the property that they have leased out to others,
absolutely
which
correct.
They're collecting
absolutely
rent
correct.
And profits.
That's absolutely correct.
And that's your position.
That's the distinction. I mean, once again, whatever the situation may be with these organizations, I think it's not relevant coming in here because it's a different jurisdiction and it's an administrative decision. It's anecdotal. It's interesting, but it's completely irrelevant to the court's determination here. But in any case, barring that irrelevance, they are completely different situations. That the ICCs and the Turner Halls and the Serb Halls in Milwaukee, and indeed their own assessor, I mean, they can be breathing easier, and they now be wondering why they bother to go out and get the green paper to file an amicus brief, because in response, their own assessor has come in and said, no, it's handled differently. These people came in, satisfied us of what they're doing, they're fine. So this is simply the extreme case of a taxpayer that does absolutely the least, comes in with no proof of anything but a lease to the entire facility, no proof, and in fact, counterproof that every single inch of this facility is, if you open the Milwaukee Yellow Pages to Exhibit 46, every single inch of that place is open for public rental.
Parts of Serb Hall and Turner are not open for public rental?
Correct. The public rental is the for-profit lease is the defined separate part of the facility.
And then you can divide up the property and say taxable, not taxable.
Correct.
That's your point.
That's correct.
Counsel, again, assuming that in the Bavarian end there is square footage that is exclusively used by the benevolent organizations and not for rent or accessible to the public, assume that's what the proof shows. Then, take a look at sub 8 in the preamble. Can't they have part of the best grounds exempt?
They can, yes. The answer was yes. They can. No, it's done differently than your question, I guess, was the no. It was just the beginning of the sentence.
You just like
the
my hypothetical.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, they are. You separate the two properties. So I think this is essentially what the city of Milwaukee is saying. In that case, if they come in and say, this little block is used exclusively for exempt purposes, the rest of it is out for public rental. You separate them, so the little block is completely exempt. The larger block is not exempt at all.
You never get to eight.
Then you take that little block in the end that is completely exempt,
correct,
exclusively used,
right,
and you say, okay, that gets us into eight or the preamble.
No, if there's no lease,
let me.
I'm sorry.
And the first grounds is